We spend more money protecting our credit score and personal property than we do our personal safety. This holiday, gift peace of mind. Gift Katana Safety, the first and only personal safety device that attaches to your smartphone. Katana is monitored by a 24/7 response center and an app that alerts seven of your loved ones. No wonder it's one of Oprah's favorite things of 2018. Buy now at katanasafety.com/junkie and get 20% off with promo code junkie. Again, that's katanasafety.com/junkie. In July 2017, Gina West once again attended a hearing for her son's killer. It was a hearing to determine whether or not he would be released from the Oklahoma Forensic Center, the largest inpatient behavioral health facility in the state. It was a hearing she had grown accustomed to. Every year since her son's killer had been sentenced, she would once again head back to court and listen as the judge read through reports and called various witnesses to the stand, trying to determine whether or not he was still considered a danger to society. Gina already knows the answer to that, and so does the prosecutor in the case. And some might argue that his attorneys do too. But Oklahoma law is complicated, and if the center's psychologists deem that he is no longer a threat, by law, the judge can then release him. Even though he committed the most heinous of crimes and showed no remorse for it, only 5 years prior. This is Jillian, and you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 64. It was 5:45 a.m. on December 6th, 2012, and Pottawatomie County Undersheriff J.T. Palmer was interviewing 18-year-old Jared Murray, who had just been taken into custody a couple hours earlier.
Jared, give me your full name.
Jared Lindruth Wayne Murray.
Okay, and what's your date of birth?
July the 20th, 1994.
Okay, and do you live with your mom and dad? Do you stay with your mom and dad?
No, I live at the dormitories in college. Before then, I lived with my grandparents in a town.
In town of Asher?
Yes.
Okay.
Jared sat up tall in his chair, his hands folded together on his lap as he spoke. He had longer, dark hair and was wearing a black suit, with a white-collared shirt and black tie. And by listening to his polite inflection and willingness to talk, you might be surprised to know that Jared had just committed an unspeakable act.
My name is Undersheriff J.T. Palmer. Me and you met on the side of Highway 177 in about Singh Road at about 3:12 this morning, didn't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And at that time, you made a couple of statements to me when I put you down on the ground, and then after we got up, I read your rights to you, correct?
You read my rights before I got up, sir.
Okay, before you got up off the ground?
Yes, sir.
But you did make a couple of statements.
Yes, sir. I
before
did
I read your rights,
sir.
Without me asking you anything.
Yes, sir.
You told me you was the guy that I was trying to find.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then I read your rights to you.
Yes, sir.
And then rights was you had the right to remain silent.
Then I had the right, sir.
Okay. Anything you say, Ken, will be used in court.
Yes, sir.
And at that, and during that talk, do you remember what you told me after I read your Miranda warning to you?
Not word for word, but the effect, yes.
Okay, and what do you remember telling me?
In summation, that I'm guilty, yes.
Of what?
Of murder.
Okay, and who did you murder?
Gennaro.
Okay, and how did you murder him?
With a gun. I shot him in the head twice.
Okay.
Three shots were fired, one missed.
And where did you shoot? Where was this? Where did this happen at?
Around 5 miles north of Asher, Oklahoma, on our side road.
The victim was 18-year-old Gennaro Sanchez, his full name, a name that Jared didn't even know.
And the young man that you said to me that you shot twice in the head?
Yes, sir.
And his name, do you know his full name?
No, sir. I only know his first name.
And his first name is what?
Gennaro. I do not know how to spell that, but it is with a G.
Okay. And do you go to school with him?
Yes, sir.
And do you stay in the same dorm?
The same building, sir.
Same building. And what's your dorm number?
463-D.
463-B?
D.
B?
Yes, sir.
And you know his?
No, but I know it's in E section.
E section? And how do you know him?
Towards the beginning of the year, we met in a mutual friend's room playing video games, sir.
Okay. And do you take any classes with him? Or?
No, sir.
Okay. So you know him through a mutual friend, and you guys dorm in the same dorm?
Yes, sir.
Different sections?
Yes, sir. But it's literally right down the hall.
Okay. And so do you spend quite a bit of time together?
No, sir.
No, sir.
Jared told Palmer that around 9 p.m. the night before, he went to Gennaro's dorm room and asked if Gennaro could give him a ride to Walmart in exchange for $20. They got into Gennaro's pickup truck. Gennaro was driving and Jared was in the passenger seat and drove to the Walmart, which Jared said was 1.7 miles away. They pulled into the parking lot, but didn't end up going inside.
So he took you to Walmart?
Yes, sir.
And did you both go in?
No, we did not go in, sir.
Okay, and why not?
We pulled into the parking lot, then I pulled the weapon on him and demanded that he take me to Asher, Oklahoma, sir.
Okay, and why did, all of a sudden, did you decide that you needed to go to Asher?
There was an uncomfortable 12-second silence.
Because I was planning to take him out into the country and kill him.
Just 2 hours prior to that interrogation, at about 3 o'clock in the morning, Undersheriff Palmer was driving on the highway when he saw a man walking alongside the road. The man appeared to be hitchhiking. The Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Department had just received a call about a suspicious man, and this man seemed to fit the description. Palmer pulled up behind him, and without looking back, the man stuck out his thumb. Sure enough, he was hitchhiking. Palmer turned his police lights on and the man stopped, now realizing that the car he had tried to hitch a ride from was in fact a police car. But there was something sinister about the man. He looked nice enough. He was dressed in a dark suit and looked to be about college age. But the first words out of the man's mouth were, "I'm the one you're looking for." Palmer placed the man in handcuffs behind his back and told him not to say anything else until he was read his rights. After he read the man his rights, the man told him that he had shot and killed someone and that the body was at the side of the road. He remarked that he had wanted to know what killing someone was like. When investigators responded to the area where the man, who had identified himself as 18-year-old Jared Murray, said the body would be located, they found an abandoned pickup truck that had gone off the road and had smashed into a tree. One of the windows appeared to have been shattered. And just a few yards away, they found a body that had been poorly covered up with leaves and a large stick. The body was that of 18-year-old Gennaro Sanchez. After being picked up by Undersheriff Palmer, Jared was brought to the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office, where he stoically detailed to Palmer what had happened.
So when you pulled the gun on him at Walmart in the parking lot?
Yes, sir.
What did you tell him?
I told him to take me to Asher.
Asher. And did he say anything?
He panicked, wanted to pull out his phone. I yanked the phone out of his hand, and then he panicked some more, kept telling me not to kill him. To make him feel more comfortable, I unloaded the clip, unloaded the bullet from the chamber, handed them over to him, and that eased his nerves a little. Then I pulled a second clip out of my pocket and set it on my lap.
Okay. And you drove him to, he drove you?
Yes, sir.
And did you have any conversation between Ada and Asher?
The entire time was a conversation, sir.
And was it basically, can you tell me what that conversation was?
About from Ada to halfway to Asher, it was just my trying to reaffirm him that I wasn't going to kill him to calm his nerves. And then from that point on, we was talking on our upbringings, our past, our family histories, things of more philosophical nature, et cetera, et cetera.
Jared said he also pulled out his phone and used the phone's GPS to show Gennaro where they were going in order to make him feel more comfortable, he said. He said that as they drove, about every 5 to 10 minutes, he showed Gennaro that the gun still wasn't loaded. But then, he said he decided that it was time.
And so you're driving east, and so I guess at some point, did you decide it was, now was the time?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and what happened?
I loaded the gun quickly, chambered the round quickly, shot once, missed, shot a second time, hit, jumped out of the car, went around, he was driving 10, 15 miles an hour, so it was rather slow, ran around the hood of the car, and of course it was slow when he wasn't purposefully driving. Tried to pull him out, couldn't get him out until he already had hit the tree, pulled him out there, dumped him into the, before I dumped him into the ditch, I heard him gurgling. I'm not sure if that was a physiological or physical process after death, but I thought that he might have still lived through that somehow, because he was gurgling, so I shot him again and then shoved him down in the ditch. I then got his phone.
Okay, hang on, let's back up just a second.
Yes, sir.
You fired the first round.
Yes, sir.
And you missed.
Yes, sir.
Do you know where that round hit?
I believe it hit the top of the door, but it might have hit the window.
Did the window bust?
The window did bust, sir, but I don't remember if that was the first or the second round.
Okay. So you fired once and missed.
Yes, sir.
And you fired a second round.
Yes, sir.
And did you hit him then?
Yes, sir.
And you hit him in the head?
In the side of the head, yes, sir.
Okay, so it would have been his right hand?
It was around here, sir.
He put his right hand just above his right ear and showed Palmer where the bullet had hit.
So when you shot, and he was still gurgling?
Yes, sir.
So was he sitting up when you shot him in the head again?
No, sir. He was lying down on the ground.
So you pulled him out of the truck?
And just threw him on the ground, and then I heard him gurgling, so I shot him a second time.
And where did you hit him the second time?
I'm not certain, but I believe the head as well.
Okay, the front, back side?
I believe it was the same side as
before. Same side as before?
Yes, sir.
So you think you hit him twice, or you know you've hit him, in fact, once in the head?
Yes, sir.
And then the second round is probably in the head area, too?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then you rode him down the ditch?
Yes, sir.
He said he grabbed Gennaro's phone from inside the vehicle. He threw it on the ground and thought about shooting that as well, but it quickly slid down the hill, and he wasn't able to find it in the dark.
Did you do something with the body after that?
Yes, sir. I repositioned it and then tried to cover it, admittedly not well, with leaves, dirts, and stick.
Okay. A stick.
Yes, sir. There was a stick on the side of the hill. I just grabbed everything on the side of the hill and pushed it on top of him.
Okay. Now, when you say a stick, I was at the scene. I went down there, and you know that.
Yes, sir.
We actually brought you back down there and had you sat in the car down there, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And there is a stick, it's about 3 foot long, about an inch and a half in diameter.
Yes, sir.
It's right across the body, but there's a whole bunch of blood on it. Is there any particular reason that stick?
It had blood on it?
Mm-hmm.
It could be because I rolled his body on top of it, because if it was on the side of the hill, his body would have crossed over it. Okay. I couldn't think of any reason in particular, though.
Okay, so you didn't hit him with a stick or do anything with him with a stick?
No, sir.
Okay, so that stick just ended up on top of him?
Yes, sir.
So it's possible he could have rolled him over on it, and then when you was covering him up, that stick just ended up on top of the body?
It ended up on top of him because of the way I covered up.
After he covered the body, he headed back to the truck and put it in reverse, but the truck wouldn't move. One of the wheels was off the ground and wasn't making traction. As he was trying to move the truck, he said he could still see the body from his vantage point, so he went over to it and tried to cover it better. He then saw headlights. A car was approaching and was slowing down, so he ran back over to the truck and flagged the car down, waving his hands. He told the man inside the car that he had dozed off behind the wheel, veered off the road, and that he now couldn't get the truck unstuck. He said the man seemed suspicious of him.
I think I don't think he knew exactly what happened, but I think he knew I did something. Maybe stealing, I don't know. Because like you said, no one travels down that road.
Did you know him?
No, sir, I did not know him. But since no one travels down that road, and he most likely lived in that area, he knew that I didn't.
Okay.
So, most likely, he was suspicious just from that fact alone, because
okay.
I had no business being on that road.
Jared asked the man if he could use his phone, and when the man gave him the phone, Jared said he typed in a random number, hoping that no one would answer. And when no one picked up, Jared then asked the man if he could give him a ride to his grandparents' house in Asher, and the man agreed. Jared matter-of-factly described what he did when he arrived at his grandparents' house. He drank a Coca-Cola and then called his roommate, Shane, to see if Shane could help him with the truck. Shane told him that he would try to call his parents to see if they could help, but they weren't home when he called. So Jared decided to go back on his own. He walked over to Shane's parents' house, who lived nearby, and stole a can of WD-40 from their yard.
Now, why did you get the WD-40?
WD-40 is a solvent. It would help degrade the oils from my fingers and get rid of my fingerprints, sir.
Okay, so you're going to take this can of WD-40 and go back to the crime scene and use WD-40 on the pickup?
Yes, sir.
To try to get rid of your fingerprint?
Yes, sir.
He walked back through the woods, and when he got close to where the body and truck were, he heard what he described as an elderly gentleman's cough. He couldn't see anything at that point, so he didn't know who it was or where exactly it was coming from. But he said he thought it might be the man who had given him a ride. He figured that maybe the man went back to the truck to turn the lights off for him so it wouldn't die, and then may have come across the poorly hidden body. Jared said he then left the area, hopping over two barbed wire fences to get away. He walked over to the highway and started heading north.
And what were your intentions when you were walking north?
Canada, sir.
You were going to Canada?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I had hoped that by determining that I was heading south, you went to Asher. You would have known my grandparents' house. And I was hoping that my name would probably show up somewhere in the course of this little thing. I didn't expect it to be found so quickly.
Why didn't you think it would be found so quick?
I didn't think someone would drive down that road. In my original plan,
okay.
I gave myself maybe 6 to 8 hours to get out of the area. But since it was found so quickly, at least I believed so at the time, I didn't want to revise the plan because I had headed south originally going into town.
Okay.
And I was hoping you'll think that I was heading towards Mexico, as it's much closer and probably easier to get past the border.
He tried hitchhiking, but only truckers were passing by, and no one stopped to pick him up. He sensed a car pull up behind him, and so he stuck his thumb out, not realizing that it was a patrol car.
That's when me and you first came in contact, correct?
Yes, sir.
And you advised them to get on the ground, correct?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And that's when I had you put your hands behind your back.
Yes, sir.
And then when I approached you, I asked you, for my safety and your safety, did you have a gun?
Yes, sir.
And you said no.
Yes, sir.
And you remember what else you said?
I might have mentioned the ammunition in my left pocket, sir.
Yes, sir. And then what else?
I'm the one you're looking for.
As he was in handcuffs, Jared had told Palmer that he had shot and killed someone and that the gun would be inside the truck. He said he hadn't had time to get the gun from the truck beforehand because the man who had ended up giving him a ride to Asher had pulled up too quickly. Palmer asked where Jared had gotten the gun. He said he had stolen it from a man named Daniel 2 weeks prior.
And how did you steal it from his house?
I went into his house. His family and my family are on good terms. I just walked in the door and went back to his mother's room and told her that I had a video game to return to Daniel. Then I went into Daniel's room, put a video game that I brought with me as a way to get into the door, and got the gun.
Palmer left Jared alone in the interrogation room for about 15 minutes. Jared stared straight ahead for each of those minutes, only looking down twice to study his hands. When he came back, Palmer told him that although he believes that Jared is telling him the truth about most things, he knows he lied about others, and that in fact, he knows that Jared had told someone about the murder immediately afterwards. Palmer told Jared that he knew he had lied about having taken the WD-40 from Shane's parents' house.
I know for a fact you didn't get the WD-40 from the front yard.
You're right. I planned on keeping him out of this, but I did go into his house. He did give it to me, and yeah.
And when you say who, and when you say him, who are you?
The parent of the friend that I called.
Shane's
father, yeah. His stepfather, yes.
And you know his name?
Michael Norris.
Okay. And what did you tell Michael?
I told him about what had happened and asked for his opinion on my next course of action.
Okay, you mean you told him what happened? What do you mean?
The murder. I told him about.
So you told Shane's father about the murder you just did?
Not the specifics, but the general picture, yes.
Okay. Can you remember what you told him?
Not exactly, but I mean, I didn't tell him I fired 3 shots, missed 1, shot him in the head, not all that. I just said that I got a truck, I killed the guy for it, it's in a ditch.
Okay. Did you tell him how you did it?
I don't remember, but I might have.
He said Shane's stepfather also drove Jared back near the scene. He hadn't walked as he had initially told Palmer. When asked why he had lied about those things, Jared said he didn't want to get Shane's stepfather involved in all this. But what Jared didn't know then was that Shane's stepfather had actually called 911 immediately after dropping Jared off near the scene. At this point, Palmer seemed to be overwhelmed by the casualness in which Jared was describing the killing. He seemed to be searching for an answer as to why. He asked Jared if Jared had ever killed anyone before.
Jared, I want to ask you just point blank, because, I mean, you sat here and confessed to
pretty much everything.
In my mind, and I think you might agree with me, just cold-bloodedly killed a young man tonight.
Yes, sir.
Or that son. Have you ever killed anybody else?
No, sir.
Okay. Have you ever thought of it?
More myself than anyone else, sir.
Yeah. And when's the last time you thought about killing yourself?
3 weeks ago, sir.
Okay. And what was going on 3 weeks ago?
Nothing in particular. My grandfather died recently, but that's not related to it. Before his death, I had similar thoughts almost as frequently.
He said he has never taken any medications for mental illness, and that in fact, he wasn't on any medications at all, and that he doesn't do drugs. Palmer then asked him point blank why he did it.
Why did you do it? I guess is what I'm asking.
If I'm pressed to answer, I'll say it's to prove the strength of my resolve. But that's only if I'm pressed to answer.
I'm not pressing you. I'm just trying to understand.
Then I don't know why.
Okay. So it just
popped in my head.
Popped in your head.
Yes, sir.
But it's never popped in your head before?
Not other people, sir, no.
That you've never killed before?
No, sir.
Okay. Animals?
No, sir. I've never hunted. I know how to hunt. I know how to make a bow and arrow. I know how to fuel dress animals and whatnot, but I've never hunted before, no.
Jared was then asked if he felt any remorse.
I want to ask you this, and you can answer if you want. I'm having a hard time.
Yes, sir.
Do you feel any remorse?
I'm sad that I got caught so quickly, but that's almost lessened by being caught by someone who has a sheriff on their jacket, so, but for killing them, no.
Okay, so it makes you feel better that, you know, somebody had a sheriff on their jacket that arrested you?
Yes, sir.
Opposed to what?
A deputy or someone like that, sir.
Okay, well, I'm not the sheriff.
I'm aware of that.
I'm the undersheriff.
The person driving me up here told me that. Yeah. But still, it's...
So it makes you feel better that you got caught by somebody up in rank than somebody under
you? Yes, sir.
But my question again is, do you have any remorse?
No, sir.
When asked why he chose Gennaro, Jared said because he thought people would miss him the least.
So kind of just by his quota status of not really having many friends or being social... It was a good victim.
His presence would be less noticed, yes.
Okay.
That said, he did have a girlfriend and some friends.
Yeah. You don't think his girlfriend would have missed him?
I wasn't aware of his girlfriend until tonight, sir.
Oh, so he told you before you killed him?
No, the entire way down there, I hadn't had any phone at Walmart. The entire way down there, she was texting him, so I was texting what he told me to text back.
Okay, so there was a conversation between his girlfriend and actually you, but you was texting what he
wanted for. To. Yes.
Okay. You don't think she's going to be upset, heartbroken?
I think she will be, sir.
How did that make you feel?
No different, sir.
Palmer concluded the interview by asking Jared what he thought his punishment should be.
You know, you've done a terrible thing tonight.
Yes, sir.
You killed a young man.
Yes, sir.
Just for the simple fact of, I guess pretty much this is safe for you.
Yes, sir.
And what do you think should happen to you?
Death sentence, sir.
And why do you think you deserve a death sentence?
An eye for an eye, sir.
Do you believe an eye for an eye?
Yes, sir.
When the interrogation was over, Jared got up, politely pushed his chair back under the table, and was officially arrested for the murder of Genaro Sanchez. Simple Contacts lets you conveniently renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. It's vision care for the 21st century. The Simple Contacts vision test is self-guided and takes less than 5 minutes. It isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it will save you so much time when you need to renew and reorder. It's designed by ophthalmologists, and a licensed doctor reviews every test, so you skip the office visit, but not the care. Simple Contacts has all the brands and types of lenses you're familiar with, so you never have to shop around to find your lenses at the best price. Best of all, Simple Contacts saves you money. The vision test is only $20, their contact lens prices are unbeatable, and standard shipping is free. As you all know, I've ordered my contact lenses from Simple Contacts a few times now, and I'm a loyal customer. Well, last week, I got a text message from them, something that I had opted into when I first ordered, which was funny because I had just been thinking that I needed to reorder my contact lenses. The text reminded me that it was time to reorder. It read, "Don't run out of contacts. Respond yes, and we'll send you another order." So I responded yes, confirmed the number of boxes and my mailing address, and placed the order with my credit card they had on file. It was the easiest way to order contacts that I have ever seen, all right over text message. And now you can get $20 off your contacts at simplecontacts.com/junkie20 or enter code junkie20 at checkout. That's simplecontacts.com/junkie20 or enter code junkie20 at checkout to get $20 off your contacts. Support for today's show comes from Care Of. Care Of is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. Just take Care Of's fun online quiz, which asks you about your diet, health goals, and lifestyle choices, and find out in 5 minutes what vitamins and supplements you specifically need. Then your vitamins will get delivered right to your door in personalized, easy-to-remember daily packs, perfect for a busy, on-the-go lifestyle. Vegan and vegetarian supplement options are available to match your dietary needs. And your monthly subscription box can be easily modified at any time. This process of ordering vitamins is so simple, not to mention kind of fun. You answer all sorts of questions in their online quiz about what your goals are, what sorts of food you eat, what your energy levels are like, etc. Then they recommend a daily vitamin plan, tell you how much it'll run you a month, and you check out. It's that simple. I just received my latest Care Of delivery with my daily personalized vitamin packets. Each day you take your vitamins from this little pack, and each day there's a little anecdote. Today's read, no two dogs have the same nose print, just like no two humans have the same fingerprints. I'll post what these look like on my Instagram stories, so if you're interested in checking them out, find me on Instagram at courtjunkie. For 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter code junkie. That's takecareof.com and enter code junkie for 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins. About an hour and a half after the interrogation concluded, Gina West was at home in Stuart, Oklahoma, about an hour away from Pottawatomie County. She had just spoken to her neighbor, who had asked her how her freshman son, Genaro, was doing at East Central University in Ada. "Oh, he just loves it," she had said. And then at 11:30 that morning, she got a text message from another neighbor telling her that she needed to call Hugh County Police because they were trying to get a hold of Genaro's parents.
And I was like, oh, no. My first thought was he had had a wreck or something coming home. And so I was like, okay. So I called the sheriff's department in Hughes County. And over the phone, the sheriff goes, "Mrs. West, I'm sorry, I hate to be the one to inform you, but your son was murdered." And I was like, excuse me? No, I just talked to him last night. That can't be possible. And he said, yes, ma'am. He goes, I'm really sorry. He goes, he was an innocent victim.
He told her that she needed to call the Pontotoc County Police and Ada. She hung up the phone and looked at her husband and told him to call Gennaro's phone immediately. I don't care how many times you have to call it. You need to call, she told him. While he was doing that, she called the sheriff's department in Ada. They told her the same thing, that her son had been murdered. They said she needed to come up there, that they had the person who murdered her son in custody.
When they started telling me, you know, a little bit about what happened, I just lost it. My husband said that I screamed for 45 minutes as we were driving down the road while he was trying to get a hold of Darryl's dad and get a hold of the rest of the family. He said that he could barely tell them anything over me screaming.
They got to Pontotoc County and were met by an officer who told her again that they had the person who did it, that he was in custody at the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Office. They directed her to go there to get the full story on what happened. When she and her husband walked out of the building and into the parking lot, Gina could no longer stand, so overcome with the shock and grief of what was happening.
My husband and I were walking out, and my brain told me to move, and my body said, you're not going anywhere. So I just collapsed. I mean, my legs just gave out, and I don't know what they were thinking, seeing this woman, you know, collapse on the ground just screaming, and the sheriff there and another man there hovering over her. I mean, I could just imagine what was going through the spectators' minds.
They drove to Shawnee, where the Pottawatomie County Sheriff's Department was, not realizing until later that they were driving through the town that her son was murdered in. They got to the sheriff's department, and after pleading with them to give her more information, they finally told her what had happened, and she immediately knew who had done it.
The first thing that I could think of, I was just like, was he wearing a suit and a trench coat? And he just looked at me, and he's like, yes. How did you know that?
About 2 months prior, a friend of Gennaro's in his dorm had gotten into a fight with another guy on campus. Gennaro had been a witness to it and had to tell the university police what had happened. Gennaro had told his mom that he was afraid of the guy.
He told me that he was kind of afraid of this young man because he was scary. He was scary smart. That he was the type of person that would get you when you least expected it.
That guy was, in fact, Jared Murray. Contrary to what Jared said in his interrogation, Gennaro Sanchez was loved and missed. He was the youngest child. In addition to an older sister, he had two older stepsisters and two older stepbrothers. And when their family first moved to Stuart, Oklahoma, Gennaro immediately made friends.
Well, we moved to a rural area in Oklahoma, and Gennaro made friends really fast with not just his classmates. He made friends with the community. Everybody knew who he was. And he would do anything for any of them. And he did. The older that he got, the more involved in the community that he was. He was more academic, you know, than anything. I used to tease him and tell him that he was a jock strap because he was just an athletic supporter. He didn't want to play sports, but he was very much into the sports. So, you know, he was always there on the sidelines, cheering his friends on, because I can't say that they were teammates because they were all friends. There were, I think, 30 kids in his graduating class, and they were all tight.
When news of Gennaro's passing spread back to his hometown, the community, including his family and his friends, of which there were many, were devastated. The principal of Gennaro's old high school had asked Gina if they could hold the memorial service inside their gymnasium, and there were some emotional, personal touches at the memorial. Gennaro's friends put together a playlist, and one of his friends' dads played Amazing Grace on the harmonica. Residents of the town, his family, his friends, came in droves to pay their respects. Gina and I spent quite some time talking on the phone, and she recounted memory after memory that she had of her son. She told me that Gennaro loved to play video games, namely Guitar Hero, and that she had bought him a guitar for his birthday one year.
He picked it up and he learned how to play it, and he taught himself how to play. And I remember I was always beating on his door or knocking on his door and saying, you've got to turn down that amp. You've got to turn it down. You're rattling the windows in the house. It's so loud. You know, it's just everywhere. And he's like, oh, crap, okay. And, you know, I miss that. I miss hearing that. I miss the guitar. I miss telling him, turn down that amp. You know, turn it down. You know, if you're going to play, go outside.
Jared Murray was charged with first-degree murder and was denied bail. Later that day, after his interrogation, investigators spoke with Jared's roommate, Shane. Shane told them that when Jared called him that night, saying that he had crashed his vehicle and needed help, he also told Shane something else, something peculiar. Jared told him that he had reached or accomplished Objective A. Shane said he didn't know what that meant. But investigators wrote in a search warrant that they believed it meant that Jared may have been planning to kill again had he not been caught. There was also that point in the interrogation where Jared had remarked that he was sad that he had gotten caught so quickly. But even after searching his dorm room and seizing his laptop, they couldn't find anything else to bolster their theory. As Jared was being held at the Pottawatomie County Jail, a disturbing image of him started to emerge. According to the university police report about that fight Jared had gotten into with one of Gennaro's friends, afterwards, that friend told university police that he wanted Jared gone from their dorm, or at least away from his room. He told the officers that he was scared of Jared and that he was afraid Jared would try to blow him up. He said Jared had the anarchist cookbook in his room. But back in Asher, Oklahoma, where Jared was from, no one seemed to notice anything odd or scary about him, aside from the fact that he constantly wore a black suit. He had no criminal history, no problems at his former high school, and the people in his hometown later told reporters that they were shocked at what he had done. Jared's sister also seemed to be in shock. She wrote on her Facebook page the day after his arrest, quote, "I'm really at a loss for words about the entire situation. I don't even know what to think right now, let alone what to say. I will say this, though. I never, ever thought in a million years that one of my brothers could, would, ever do anything even remotely close to this." In April 2013, prosecutors announced that they would be seeking the death penalty. District Attorney Richard Smotherman told the court that the killing was especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel, and that Jared deserved to die. But there was a serious question about Jared's mental state. Both the state and the defense had hired experts to assess him, and they both ended up agreeing. Jared did not know right from wrong at the time of the shooting. The state's expert noted that Jared said every person was a piece on a Japanese chessboard and that he was the king. He also wrote that Jared had talked about how he had been planning on killing somebody and how on the day of the murder, he had just gotten a feeling that it was time. Gina said she knew what was about to happen.
I know that every single case that goes across the DA's desk is important to the DA. And I know that he's got to treat each and every one of them the same. You know, they've got to put their heart and soul into everything that they do. But there is only one case that was important to me, and that was my son's. And I had nothing but time on my hands. Nothing but time. So I dug and I dug and I dug and I researched and I researched. And I would schedule times with my victim's advocate and with the DA. And I told him, I said, look, I said, I'm telling you now, he thinks that he's smarter than you guys and he's going to plead insanity.
Gina said they brushed off her concerns that Jared would plead insanity. They told her that she was putting the cart before the horse.
I said, no. I said, you don't understand. I said, him being found not guilty by reason of insanity is not acceptable to me. It's not. I said, he will never be convicted of my son's crime if this happens. I said, he will be innocent of premeditated murder. I said, so don't tell me that I'm putting the cart before the horse. I said, this is very real. This could happen. No, there's only 1% of that could happen in the state of Oklahoma. Well, guess what? We fell in that 1%.
Gina was right. In July 2015, as a result of the reports submitted by both the state and the defense, Pottawatomie County District Judge John G. Canavan Jr. ruled that Jared was not guilty by reason of insanity. Instead of prison, he would be sent to a state mental hospital for treatment. His release date would be dependent on whenever a judge rules that he is no longer a danger to society. Judge Canavan told Gennaro's family in court that he wished there was something else he could do for them.
He said he was begging for more. He said, please tell me that we have more. He said, because I do not want to rule this the way that it's going to be ruled. He goes, and then he looked at me, he goes, I'm so sorry. He goes, but I have to go by the letter of the law. And the letter of the law says that he is to be found not guilty by reason of insanity.
And so Jared was sent to the Oklahoma Forensic Center for treatment. After the sentencing outside the courtroom, District Attorney Richard Smotherman was angry too. He said Gennaro's family didn't get justice. The system failed them today, he said, and the laws of the state of Oklahoma failed them today because he has not been found guilty. He has not been held accountable. This is a ludicrous result. He called on the state legislators to change the law so that instead of being found not guilty by reason of insanity, defendants like Jared could instead be found guilty by reason of insanity. And so that after they receive treatment, if they're ever found to be sane again, they could then be transferred to prison to serve out their sentence. Because as it stood in Jared's case, by law, he would be released once his treatment was over. And to nearly everyone's shock, one forensic psychologist was about to make Jared's release a real possibility sooner than anyone could have thought. 1 month after Jared was deemed not guilty by reason of insanity, Dr. Peter Rausch, a forensic psychologist at the facility where Jared had been receiving treatment, wrote in his report that, quote, while Mr. Murray's history suggests he has a mental illness, he does not presently exhibit any substantial signs of mental illness, and given that his mental condition is stable, he is not considered to be a present danger to the public. Dr. Rausch said that when Jared was admitted, he denied having any psychiatric problems and that the only signs of mental illness then were pressured speech. He said he met with Jared several times over the last month and noted no signs of mental illness. He wrote that while Jared's rate of speech was at times fast, it never reached the level that it was pressured. He wrote that while some of Jared's ideas could be perceived as odd, they weren't delusions. And therefore, he believed that Jared could be released. But another report by a psychiatrist at the facility disagreed and wrote in his report that Jared should remain in treatment, that he was still a danger to society. One excerpt from his report reads, quote, Mr. Murray reports that he is extremely smart, much smarter than anyone, and when taking tests at school, he never wrote answers down. He just figured them out in his head. He also related this thought process to his index offense, indicating that someone had to die. He wrote that Jared had a bipolar mood disorder with psychotic features, or a schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type. He wrote that Jared was delusional. Quote, he demonstrates grandiose and paranoid delusions about the world, himself, and other people. Given the conflicting reports, the prosecutor asked that Jared be assessed by two additional doctors, both of whom would submit their reports to the court too. The defense didn't challenge that request, and so Judge Canavan agreed. Two more experts would assess him before Judge Canavan made his decision on whether or not Jared would be released. In the meantime, many wondered if Jared would be released, and if so, what then? In November 2015, the results of those reports were heard in the courtroom. Both psychiatrists had deemed Jared mentally ill and stated that he is still a danger to society. In fact, Jared himself had told them that he couldn't rule out physical violence in the future. And in addition to those reports, a witness had also testified in court. A man who was housed in a jail with Jared after his arrest testified that Jared had bragged about playing the system and told him that not only would he kill again, but that he had specific targets in mind.
He was in one of the same pod cells that Jared Murray was in, and that Jared had been bragging about how he had played the legal system. He knew what to say. He knew how to act because he's smarter than everybody else, and got out of murder and was bragging about how he was going to get out. Whenever he did, he was going to kill Gennaro's mom. Or that boy's mom, because he didn't even care enough to remember his name. And then he was going to kill the DA.
So he said he was going to kill that boy's mom, along with the DA. Judge Canavan ruled that Jared would not be released from the facility at this time. Defendants in Oklahoma who have been found not guilty by reason of insanity are typically not released so quickly, like what almost happened in Jared's case. It's actually a rare occurrence, but it can happen. And in 1988, it did happen. And the same concerns were raised then. In January 1988, 18-year-old John Thomas Harris went to trial after he was accused of strangling his mother to death. He had confessed to police, telling investigators that he had just snapped after she had told him that she wished he had never been born. But at his trial, his attorneys called a psychologist to the stand, who testified that he had lost control of reality after having endured abuse at the hands of his mother. He was found not guilty by reason of insanity and was sent to a facility for treatment. But just 1 month later, the facility's doctors reported that he was not mentally ill, and so he was released. Outside the courtroom, Harris told reporters that he was actually innocent and that the not guilty by reason of insanity defense was, quote, just the route my lawyer had to take to save my life. He said detectives had put words into his mouth and that he hadn't confessed at all. He said he loved his mother, but that he was just ready to get on with his life. Back then, critics called for a change in the law, but it never came. Until 2016, after Gina West and District Attorney Smotherman had started working with the Oklahoma legislators on a bill that would create a new defense option, guilty with mental defect.
His life had meaning. And I was going to make sure that people knew that his death had meaning too. And with this bill change, he or anybody else that tries to claim insanity will immediately go for evaluation. And whatever treatment that the doctors deem fit, they will have. And then the courts, if the courts have said that they will go to prison or that they should go into prison, then that's what will happen. So they will get their treatment, and then the families will still get their justice. So there is no longer a not guilty by reason of insanity on an antisocial or an anti-personality disorder like Jared Murray's. Now, if a person is insane, and they are really insane, then they will stay in a facility that can control the environment that that person is in. But if they are another Jared Murray, they will pay for what they've done. And at least, at the very least, I was able to help another family or families where they would not ever have to worry about an outcome like this.
Gina said she and Smotherman worked with the Department of Mental Illness, as well as other defense attorneys, in order to perfect the bill.
Yeah, they helped with the wording. They helped with all of the clinical definitions and the things that we needed to look for and how we needed to present it. And then we had other attorneys looking it over, making sure that nobody's amendment rights were being taken away from them, that everything was within the scope of the law, everything.
The key point in the bill is the use of the word antisocial personality disorder, sometimes called sociopathy, where a person shows no regard for right or wrong and ignores the rights and feelings of others. They show no guilt or remorse for their behavior. In fact, the most broadly recognized mental disorder associated with serial killers is antisocial personality disorder, and many mental health experts believe that this sort of disorder can't be fixed, not with medication, nor with therapy. This new law would exclude people with this disorder from using the insanity defense. So in Jared's case, someone who confessed to the crime and premeditated it, like he admitted to doing, he would have to serve out the same amount of time at a maximum security hospital as he would if he had been handed down a normal prison sentence. In addition, anyone who is found guilty with mental defect would be required to be examined by the State Department of Mental Health prior to being released on any kind of probation. The bill was signed by the governor of Oklahoma in September of 2016. Smotherman released a statement saying, quote, "This bill targets the most dangerous criminals who have mental illnesses but will never be cured by treatment, the ones that kill just to kill or hurt others because they get pleasure from it. This bill would allow a jury to send these criminals to prison rather than a mental hospital, which is where they deserve to be." Although it doesn't work proactively and has no effect on Jared's case, Gina said she was glad that no other families in Oklahoma would have to endure what they do, and she's hoping that other states might look at the writing in this law, too. Jared has been up for release several times now since his initial sentence. Every year in November, he is up for review. But each time, so far, his request has been denied. Most recently, his request was heard in July of 2017, where he testified on his own behalf.
He got on the witness stand, and he figuratively cut his own throat as far as admitting that he has been manipulating his doctors to give him the medications or not give him the medications that he has been taking. And he actively admitted to the fact that if he ever got out on his own, he would not ever take his medication until after he hurt somebody.
In his ruling denying the motion, Judge Canavan wrote that he was concerned that Jared would hurt someone again, according to Jared's own statements. While he was reportedly making progress while on medications, he would regress when off his medications, which was also of great concern. Judge Canavan noted that if Jared had the opportunity, as he said, he would likely stop taking his medications. Judge Canavan also expressed concern that a 5-inch knife blade had been found on Jared the week prior to the hearing. A doctor from the Oklahoma Forensic Center also testified that out of 200 patients, Jared is the most dangerous. Judge Canavan concluded, "When you're the most dangerous patient out of 200, the court finds that he is a danger to himself and others, that he's in the least restrictive setting that I'm willing to give him at this time." After the ruling, Smotherman called Jared a frightening individual and said that if released, he has no doubt that he would kill again. Gina told me that Jared is actively trying to be released and continues to file motions year after year, and she is there for each and every court hearing.
I only had him for 18 years. But in that 18 years, there is no way that I could ever, ever be as good of a Christian or as a good a person as my son was. And I tell that to people daily, that my son was the best part of me. And he was a very good kid. And it breaks my heart that I only have 18 years of memories and that I have a lifetime to go with no new ones. And during my life, I will see and witness all of his friends getting older, having families, having careers, and Jinro won't.
Among the many memories she fondly looks back on, some of them are from his childhood.
He was a very clingy baby. You could not put him down. He wanted to be held all the time, all the time. I couldn't get out of his sight. He always wanted me to hold him. And he would sit there and I would rock him to sleep and he would just sit there and he would just play with my hair. You know, I had to keep long hair because that was just his security blanket, you know. It wasn't a blanket. It wasn't a toy. It was my hair. And then whenever he would start, or he was school age, he was too big of a boy, or, you know, he was a big boy then. So he couldn't hold my hand anymore when we were walking to him from the bus stop. And so that broke my heart because I have my four-year-old telling me, I'm too big to hold your hand. I can't do that. I'm a big boy. So I had to come up with something, you know, very creative, you know, to get my baby back. And so, you know, I just told him, I said, Mommy's hand is cold. Can you at least just, you know, warm it up for me? And so that's what he did. He was never holding my hand. He was just warming it up.
After going through what she's been through, Gina does have some advice for other families.
You know, if there was one thing that I could tell other families, that would be that every emotion that they have is okay. Every single one of them. There is no expiration date on the loss that you feel for losing a child, and there will never be closure. Even when you think that there is, there's not. And something that was hard for me to remember or to wrap my mind around, and that was the fact that it's not just me that's suffering. It's not just my family. My son's friend lost a brother. You know, they are mourning him. They miss him just as much as I do. There's times when they want to get on the phone and have a conversation with him, and they can't. And I recently realized that I don't just need them, but they need me. You know, it always seemed like whenever I was going down in the dumps, one of the boys would always come by just to give me a hug or whatever. And it would just be like out of the blue. And then I stopped and thought, well, you know, maybe they needed that too. Maybe they needed that part of Gennaro.
To keep up with Gennaro's family and with any updates in the case, visit facebook.com/inmemoryofG. That page is run by Gina's sister, Michelle, Gennaro's aunt. I'd also love to know what you think about this case. What are your thoughts on the new law that Gina and her family advocated for in Oklahoma? Let me know by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com, by tweeting me at courtjunkiepod, or by joining my discussion group at Facebook at courtjunkie.com/Facebook. I want to give a special thank you to both Gina and her sister Michelle for helping me tell Gennaro's story. I also found a lot of great info while researching the not guilty by reason of insanity plea. The plea itself is an option in most states, but the criteria for using it varies. And there are 4 states that don't offer an insanity plea at all. Those states are Kansas, Montana, Idaho, and Utah. It's all very complex, but if you're interested in learning more, I might do a brief on the topic sometime in the near future. And I also have a scheduling update for you. This will be the last regular Court Junkie episode until after the holidays. My next regular episode will be released on Monday, January 21st. I will, however, be releasing an update episode during that time, so make sure you hit subscribe so you get it as soon as it's up. And in the meantime, I have a lot of great stuff coming up, so stay tuned. Have a great holiday, everyone, and Happy New Year. Thanks for listening. Until next time.